When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey there, holy rollers, heathens, and everyone else in between. Today's guest is songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Eric Bazillion. Together, we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the smash hit single, One of Us, made famous by Joan Osborne and taken from her 1995 album, Relish. The story of this song is phenomenal. A chance encounter with a woman Eric met on a flight turned into a romance a few months later. That woman, who is now his wife of 28 years, was intrigued by writing and recording music. At her insistence, she asked Eric to pick up the guitar and show her a few things. A short time later, One of Us was born, and I'll let him fill you in on the rest. Eric's a repeat guest here on Krista Makes a Podcast. We last had him on to talk about And We Dance from his band The Hooters. And speaking of The Hooters, their producer Rick Chertoff produced One of Us. And Eric's bandmate and keyboardist Rob Hyman sat in and played drums on the song, where he absolutely crushed the performance. So I volley the question to each of you listening. What if God was one of us? So stick around and find out.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard?
Eric, welcome back.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Just great, thanks.
You've been up for a little while, you said, and you look bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You were last here on January 10th, 2022. It's almost been 2 years. Of course, Eric is from The Hooters. We broke down And We Danced then, and it was one of my favorite episodes, not just saying that because I'm facing you right now. It really was. And little things keep happening in my life. I was in Hamburg, Germany this past June, and we were playing the same venue, Less Than Jake and The Hooters. You were there a little bit after us, and I took a picture of it, and I sent it to our Facebook group, and I thought that was really cool. But I got to tell you, I look up to you so much because I looked, you know, what you did pre-Hooters and then in the band, and all the while you're writing these songs. And I'd imagine by 1994, 95, you know, your star had worn off a little bit from The Hooters. You know, you were still writing these amazing songs. And all of a sudden, 1995, this hit happens for you that is just massive. I dare to say this was as big or bigger than any Hooters song you had written up to that point.
You dare write. Absolutely. You know, with the Hooters, we never had a top 10 record in the United States. I mean, One of Us was a worldwide hit. That was number one in a lot of places, top five just about everywhere. Something I certainly didn't see coming. And you know, when I finished writing the song, I didn't see it coming because it was a weird song. Let's face it, it wasn't your garden variety pop hit. But when we heard Joan sing it the next day, we knew that it was destined for something. And, you know, it really is an amazing redemption story for me, because I really thought, you know, the Hooters had, you know, I thought that our star had sort of faded and didn't know what was going to come next. Certainly didn't know we were going to have this whole other career in Europe. And that, you know, that was 94, that, you know, 30 years later, we'd be having this conversation.
Right. Right. Well, was this song, because I know later on the demo appeared as a hidden track on your first solo album, which came out in the year 2000, The Optimist.
Yep.
But was this something you had sitting around? Because I know you were writing songs for Joan Osborne's first record, Relish. And of course, the producer was Rick Chertoff, who produced the Hooters stuff. So you knew Rick for a long time. So was this something that was written during the sessions or something that you had written previously?
I'm going to take a deep breath to see if I can tell this whole story on one breath.
Okay.
I've told it a few times. I think I'll spread it out. I'll give myself some pulmonary relief here.
Please do.
So we go back to, with Rick Chertoff to, good Lord, I go back with him to 1971 when I started at the University of Pennsylvania, and I met Rob and Rick, who had a band. They'd met in 68 at Penn, and Rick was the drummer in our first band, one in Wax, and he went on to become a producer in New York. He did the Cyndi Lauper album.
Yes.
And it was because of his tenacity that we can talk about Girls Just Want to Have Fun Now, because she didn't like the song, had no intention of singing it. And it wasn't until I came up with the guitar riff and the basic musical setting for it that she agreed to sing it, and of course said that she always loved it.
Of course.
Rick was a bit of an A&R genius. He really knew when a voice and a song had what it took to connect with the world. So let's fast forward, past Cyndi's success, the Hooters' success. He got his own label and signed Joan, and brought Rob and I in as the musical team. With Cyndi, he brought in a bunch of songs. Rick brought in Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Money Changes Everything, All Through the Night. With Joan, we didn't really have anything. The idea was that we were just going to write songs and arrange them and make a record, sort of like Sheryl Crow with Tuesday Night Music Club.
Sure, okay.
But we were the everyday music club for Joan. So we were a few months into the project. In fact, we were getting ready to go to a cabin in upstate New York to make the record. We had a bunch of songs already written. And I'd met a girl. I met a girl on a flight to Sweden in July, and we connected for real in October, November, and then decided that she was going to come move in with me in Philadelphia for a few months while we were making the Joan record and before we went on tour in April. And a week after she moved in, I picked up a guitar at Rob's garage, a room above Rob's garage, which is where we wrote most of the songs.
And real quick, for the listeners, you're speaking of Rob Hyman from the Hooters.
Yes, from the Hooters. And also, my co-band member for the Cyndi Lauper album and co-writer of Time After Time.
Right.
I picked up a guitar and started playing that guitar riff. It just fell under my fingers and didn't think much about it. And then later that day, I went home. And Sarah, my new Swedish girlfriend at the time, Sarah and I watched The Making of Sergeant Pepper, a documentary with George Martin sitting at the 4-channel red console showing, how the whole band is on track one, all the vocals are on track two, tambourine is on track three, and guitar solo is on track one. And it ended, and she said to me she was fascinated by 4-track recording technology. What's that all about? Well, I said, that's what's on the dining room table. It was a Porta Studio, a Tascam 244, with a bunch of wires and a microphone and a keyboard sampler and a guitar plugged in. And she said, "Oh, show me how you make a record with this 4-track thing." So I made an instrumental track around that guitar riff. Did an arrangement, a verse, chorus, pre-chorus, and then she said, "Well, sing it." At this point, it was probably midnight, and I tried to explain to her that, the concept of, how songs are written, that, you have a musical idea, then a chorus and a concept, what the song is about. You spend a lot of time working on the lyrics. You write, you rewrite, you give up, you start over again. It's a long thing and very painful. You don't want to be around for this. Don't try this at home. And she fell asleep, and I heard a voice in my head. I heard Brad Roberts from the Crash Test Dummies with that.
Yeah.
I heard his voice singing, "If God had a name." I put the machine in record and I sang the song.
If God had a name, what would it be? And would you call it to his face? If you were faced with him in all his glory, what would you ask if you had just one question? And yeah, yeah, God is great. Yeah, yeah, God is good. Yeah. What if God was one of us? Just a smile like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus, trying to make his way home.
I sang the verses on the first pass. The second pass, I punched in and got the choruses. I was stuck for a last line, just a stranger on the bus. Da da da, because he must, da, 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 without a fuss, no, da da da, da. And Sarah woke up at this point and trying to get home, just a stranger on the bus, trying to get home, no, trying to find it, trying to make his way. Thank you. You can go back to sleep now.
That's incredible, because this song feels like it was written like that, and we'll get into it in a bit. Just, it almost seems like the pre-chorus that made the record was you just kind of scatting at 2 a.m, you know, yeah, 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 and you couldn't best the lyric.
the whole song was just scatting. I mean, that's the thing. It just came out in one piece, you know. It's like I created the heavens and the earth.
I'll tell you, though, the simplicity of the verse, just the basic chord progression that is also the chorus, but what you do to it later in the song. There's some turnarounds, what you did with the backing vocals. It's really genius how they sit in.
Well, that's what happens when you don't think about it. That's when you're in the flow and the song is telling you what it wants.
Before we jump into this, I have to ask, and there's just so many examples, a couple that come to mind is I've Done Everything for You, Sammy Hagar. That was one of his songs in the 70s. Didn't do much. Of course, Rick Springfield recorded it. It became a hit. Heart and Soul by Huey Lewis. It was recorded by Exile, who had done Kiss Me All Over.
Right.
Another band had recorded it and it didn't do anything. Then Huey put his stamp on it.
Yep.
And is this song still a hit if Joan didn't deliver, you know?
We'll never know, will we? Had it been a Hooters song, I don't think it would have been the hit that it is. I think it needed Joan's voice.
Mm-hmm.
I think hers was the voice. You know, a lot of people have covered it. Prince covered it. I'm sure you know that. It's an interesting cover. I don't think it sells the song in the same way. There's something kind of meta about Prince doing it. And, you know, just the fact that Joan sang it was sort of miraculous. I think that if it had been presented to her any differently, probably we wouldn't be having this conversation. But, you know, I played my demo for Rick and Rob and Joan the day after I wrote it. And it ended and I looked around the room and, you know, I see Joan sitting there like, okay, well, let's get back to work. And I see Rob sitting there like, oh God, here's another one of Eric's weird songs. And he'll be the first to admit that. And Rick looks up and says, without missing a beat, Joan, do you think you could sing that? And she took it as a challenge and basically said, I can sing the phone book. And, you know, I wrote out the lyrics and we recorded it, you know, straight to a DAT tape, guitar and vocal. And that we just looked around the room and we all knew that what was happening.
Now, I believe I've heard that DAT tape demo, okay? It's okay. Of Joan singing, and I can tell it's you playing guitar. It's very stripped down.
If God had a name, What would it be, and would you call it to his face? If you were faced with him in all his glory, what would you ask if you had just one question? Yeah.
It's about three and a half minutes, which isn't as long as the song, which we're going to be speaking about the single edit today, the single version, the most well-known version of One of Us. But a couple other things before we jump into the track here. So a lot of times outside writers, they write the song, they hand it off, they're not there. But you were there in the studio when this was being cut, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's if you know, you compare that to the demo, the guitar part is, aside from the solo, which didn't exist on my demo had an instrumental bridge, a completely different musical thing. But aside from the lack of guitar solo, I note for note, it's exactly what I played on the demo. So, you know, the guitar part is, to me, as integral a part of the song as the melody and the lyric.
Absolutely. And the only thing different I saw on the demo I heard online that Joan sang was you get the Rolling Stone line in chorus two, but that doesn't make it till chorus three later. Other than that, it was identical. The song is 4 minutes and 15 seconds. It's a 16 bar intro. That guitar panned off left starts the song and is quickly joined by another guitar panned off right, playing along with the bass guitar and drums. On bar six, Joan does a little yeah vocal, and it almost, that yeah vocal there was interesting, and I realized that it kind of had to be there because there's a whole 30 seconds before this song starts. It's kind of this weird intro that happens. So I think you needed to hear a voice here when Joan does the yeah yeahs there.
Yeah.
This chord progression takes us into verse one. The stereo guitars in the intro are playing the beautiful chorus melody hook. It's everywhere in this song. You can't get 10 seconds past that hook to hear it again, either the vocal or the guitar. It's genius.
Yeah, I mean, it's an iconic riff, that's for sure. And it's funny, in the demo, the guitar vocal demo, Rob didn't have a capo lying around. So I had to play it in F sharp minor. I wrote it in E minor and then took it up a step for her voice. I had to play it without a capo. Now, let me tell you, I'm very good at faking things without a capo. This one was an exception. This was really a bitch to play.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to begin without a capo on this one.
So an interesting thing happened. We went to the Grammys. Didn't win, but afterwards we were at the Warner Brothers party, and I ran into Eddie Van Halen, who I'd met a couple times, and he came up and he said, "How'd you play that riff, man?" And I knew exactly what was going on in his head. I know Eddie Van Halen, I'm sure, doesn't own a capo.
Right. Yeah, his fingers just stretched that far.
So I just gave it a second. I went, "Capo." And I saw his jaw drop, and he went, "Oh, man, it's way cooler without one." I went, "No, man, it's just way harder without one."
Eddie Van Halen came up to you to talk about your guitar playing.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty fascinating.
That is really cool. That is really, really cool. So, you know, I something I didn't mention earlier, and it's kind of here nor there, but, you know, in 1995, I was this young punk rock kid. If it wasn't 200 beats a minute, and this song was everywhere, but I wasn't listening to it. I tuned out. I have been singing this song nonstop in my head. Hopefully, no offense, Eric, when we stop recording today, I can maybe get away from it for a second. It just, this piece of music just has me enthralled. It's just such a pleasure to be breaking this down because I was young and I missed it.
So one of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this old world's gonna reel and rock. Saints, they all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's going to come in his heaven airplane.
Yeah.
What would it be and would you call it to his face? If you were faced with him in all his glory, what would you ask if you had just one question?
If God had a name, what would it be? And would you call it to his face? If you were faced with him in all his glory, what would you ask if you had just one question? There's no rhyme scheme here, Eric.
That's right. I'm so proud of that.
Doesn't rhyme at all.
I'm so proud of that. It was a while before I realized that, because usually I fall victim to the tyranny of the rhyme. And this one just didn't want that. It just came out that way. Conceptually, I think that the real crux of the matter in this one is the last line. What would you ask if you had just one question? Kind of like getting three wishes from the genie.
Because it doesn't rhyme, there's something about it that makes it so personal. It's like someone at confessional or something, or telling somebody a dear secret. It doesn't sound like it was fabricated. It sounds like someone's just talking to somebody. And I couldn't get over that. Nothing rhymes in this verse. That's pretty strange in songwriting.
It is. There are some great, very well-known examples of it, like Losing My Religion.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single rhyme.
Right. Well, the drums, bass, and the slightly broken up arpeggiated guitar panned off left are here. Super sparse in this verse, but beautiful, and it really lets the vocal breathe here. Eric, there's a great slap delay on the vocals, and I can't tell if it's like a delay bust off to the right side, like a panning, or is the mellotron here, because I panned off right slightly, because I know that Rob was credited as playing the mellotron, but I don't really hear it till later in the song.
It doesn't enter until the pre-chorus after the solo.
Right. Okay. That's where I had it, but I was wondering here if I'm hearing overtones, something buried here, because
you're hearing the Wurlitzer that I played.
Okay. That's what it is.
Because on my original demo, there's electric guitar on one side, a programmed bass up the middle, and then a programmed electric piano on the other side.
Face to all his glory. What would you ask if you had just one question?
So I kind of had it in my head that there was going to be an electric piano, and since I knew that I wanted it to double the guitar exactly, so the easiest way to do that was just to play it myself.
And again, I'm going to talk about how sparse this verse is. It's just that lone guitar with the bass and the drums, and it really lets that vocal. There's something, again, really personal about this vocal, her delivery, the way that, I'll say it, the way she sold it, the way the song's presented.
And that was not an easy thing to get from her. You know, the first time she sang it on that guitar vocal demo, she nailed it. She sang it perfectly. Then she started thinking. So every time we recorded it, you know, even when we cut the track, which was in itself a magical thing, Rob Hyman playing drums for the first time.
Well, that was another thing I want to talk to you about. That's strange. Was he a drummer?
Nope, he was not a drummer. He'd played, you know, we had jammed a few times with him on drums and me on whatever. But we just weren't getting the vibe we wanted with the drummer we had. And Rob said, let me give it a shot. And it was one take, and he just totally took it to the place it needed to be.
I hope our drummer never gets sick and they put me behind the kit.
You never know.
that'd be pretty disastrous.
But the thing about that was, since, you know, we cut the track as a three-piece, you know, Mark Egan on bass, it was much more open than it would have been if Rob had been playing, you know, whatever, organ or piano, electric piano. So there was a lot more space in it, and we were very careful about filling up that space. It hadn't even occurred to me to double that guitar part, and it was William Whitman, the engineer on that album, his idea.
He mixed the record as well, correct?
Yeah, he recorded it. Yeah. He's in his own right is a brilliant producer and great musician.
I wonder if Rob being stuck behind the kit, you know, I wonder if he would have got in there and wanted to be putting keyboard parts and stuff around it. That's an interesting thought.
Well, he did. I mean, because we got to the point where the track was just about done. And he said, I got to play some keyboard on this. And he said,
of course.
Give me a mellotron.
Yeah.
But it was Bill's idea to double the main guitar with a Rickenbacker 12 string, which I always carry with me. I've had that. I'm the original owner of a 1966 Rickenbacker 12 string. I was 12 years old when I got it. There you go. Oh, That's not a Capri. What is that called?
I'm not sure. This is my father's guitar. This is a Rickenbacker, and I will for those listening, I will, if Chris is going to keep this in the edit, I will post a picture of this on the Facebook group. But I believe this is a late '80s model.
Yeah, right here. Interesting. Because a friend of mine in Stockholm, where I live part of the year, he really wanted a Rickenbacker 12 string, and the music store that's around the corner from where we live there got one in that one, but in Sunburst. And I called him immediately. I said, this is a great one for you. And I actually regret letting him buy it because I have three 66 Rickenbacker 12 strings now. As cool as it is to have the vintage, that Rickenbacker is a much more stable instrument than the earlier ones. The neck joint is much sturdier, stays in tune. That's a great instrument you've got there.
My dad graduated high school in 66. He had a 66 Sunburst Rick. So you probably have the same.
I have one, two of them right over there.
That is so awesome. Well, pre-chorus one comes right off the heels of verse one. We get a relief here from the chord progression.
Yep.
We change.
God is.
Yeah, yeah, God is great. Yeah, yeah, God is good. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
And I almost get the feeling from this lyric, it's kind of like, yeah, yeah, blah, 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 God is great. Is that the sentiment?
It seems to be.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, again, you know, I was just sort of in the room when it happened.
Right. And did you ever come back? Did Rick or anybody say, "Hey, there's got to be something more here. There's not much there."
No one ever suggested changing a word or a note.
Awesome.
No, for me, that's it. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to get too deep into questions of theology here, but that kind of pretty much sums up my relationship to it.
Oh, that's so good. Well, sounds like a breathy, subtle double vocal comes in here, very buried behind. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yep, yep. I think that's me. Yep, that is me. I did the whisper.
Okay, there is a whisper there. I was like, that is a really cool effect that happens there. It's so subtle that I was wondering if, I said, that's not coming off her lead vocal. I just didn't think. Right on the heels of pre-chorus one, we go into chorus one.
Yeah, what if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus, trying to make his way home.
What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus, trying to make his way home. Slob. That's a pretty big descriptor.
Well, what is it a descriptor of is the question. What am I describing there? What is the writer describing there?
Just an everyday, ordinary person?
Person, right, right. Not describing the big guy, describing the little guy, right? A slob like one of us, because I did get some like, you calling God a slob? I'm like, no, dumbass, learn the English language. I didn't say, what if one of us was a slob like God? I said, what if God was a slob like one of us? Next.
That's crazy because I've never even thought it like that. That's very interesting because it could be taken the other way.
It could be, but you'd be an idiot if you took it that way.
I just raised my hand. I'm an idiot. Back to the verse.
And honestly, if it had scanned better, I would have gone just a dumb schmuck like one of us.
Well, chorus one is back to the verse progression. Drums, bass, guitar left, still playing a simpler arpeggio picking pattern than guitar right, which is playing this call and response part with the vocals. It's haunting, insanely catchy, and I'm going to use the word again. It's genius. There's also a super distorted fuzzy guitar straight up the middle.
Yep.
Before we get into verse two, that guitar is, it's almost like something you'd hear on like a Ministry record or a Nine Inch Nails. It's really harsh. It almost, if it was mixed louder, wouldn't fit, but it's brilliant.
That was the idea. You know, bear in mind the historical context. We're making this record in 1994, grunge.
Yeah.
And grunge is very close to sort of my home aesthetic musically. I like playing distorted guitars, not like generally speaking, like big fuzzy guitars, but you know, there's a crunch to my my tone, and a kind of like a, you know, I don't care thing, which was very fit in with the grunge thing. I think that's why that record fit in with what was happening on the radio at the time. And that fuzzy guitar was sort of the only nod to that side of grunge, to sort of the Smashing Pumpkins aesthetic.
Yeah, yes. That's the sound. I said Nine Inch Nails or Ministry. No, it's more Pumpkins. Yeah. And that is so cool because I didn't even think of the time period that you're speaking of, 94, the whole grunge thing. But I can't tell you, I probably rewound the chorus probably 6 or 7 times and just zoned in on that guitar over and over going, wow, that is so interesting.
We actually, I think I double tracked the guitar originally. And I think Joan was like, nope, that's pushing it too far. Having
it's
two of them.
Too big.
Too big, too that thing. So we pulled it down to one.
Well, it's killer. Well, verse 2.
God had a face. What would it look like and would you want to see? If seeing meant that you would have to believe in things like heaven and in Jesus and the saints and all the prophets.
If God had a face, what would it look like and would you want to see? If seeing meant that you would have to believe in things like heaven and in Jesus and the saints and all the prophets. Again, no rhyme scheme.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if it was you that said this. Someone not too long ago on the show said that they like songs with questions because it evokes thought from the listener. And there's a lot of questions in this song.
The song is all one question, basically. It's a run-on sentence. In fact, the way when I am on my demo, the second verse starts, and yeah, if God had a face. So it is literally running a run-on sentence. And yeah, yeah, the whole thing is just going and going and going and going. It never stops.
Hey, everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Eric Bazillion coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, I hope you're all enjoying today's episode of Krista Makes a Podcast. It's listeners like you who keep us going strong. And the most impactful way to help us keep this show going is to head to KristaMakes.com and sign up for our supporting cast. You'll get weekly bonus episodes of The After Party, where we do fun episodes about music history, classic albums, tour stories, trivia, and everything else you can imagine. Plus, there's an enormous back catalog of these episodes, so we can keep you laughing and learning for a really long time. So yeah, for the cost of buying us a drink because you enjoy Krista Makes a Podcast, you can help us continue to create episodes with all of your favorite artists. Just head to KristaMakes.com to sign up, and from the bottom of our hearts, thanks for listening to the show. And now, back to the show.
Well, again, this was 1995. This was not recorded to Pro Tools. Did you guys cut the rhythm tracks all live on the floor, or did you...
Pretty much, yeah. That was the idea, you know, why we just recorded in a hunting lodge up in upstate New York.
There's a great groove here, and Rob knocked it out of the park. I mean, it's...
Totally.
It's such a great feel. I don't know if you could have brought in some of the heavyweights, you know, your session players, the Kenny Aronoffs, if they could have even gotten that feel.
Nope,
and that's no disrespect to the heavyweights. It's just it's incredible what he brought to the table here. Verse 2, we got the same instrumentation as verse 1 overall, but that Wurlitzer panned off to the right seems louder in the mix here.
Could be. I didn't see the faders during the mix. So
I almost wondered there if verse 2, just because now you're after chorus 1, that you were digging in a little bit more, and maybe that's why it's louder.
Could be. Now, is the Wurlitzer pan to the right, or is it up the middle?
Well, I don't know if I'm hearing like a delay that's been shot over to the right. I'm hearing something. I don't really hear it up the middle.
Well, here's the thing.
In the verse.
Since the guitar, same thing with the delay, because you were wondering if the delay was panned to panned
yeah,
opposite.
Yeah, right.
If you have music up the left, then generally anything else is going to sound like it's to the right, even if it's panned up the middle.
Yeah.
That's just psychoacoustics.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why a lot of times I'll take just one headphone and I'll plug my other ear, you know, and try to
right.
listen that way, because it does mess with you.
Although the Wurlitzer, Bill might have put the stereo simulator on that. I know he does that a lot. Studio Technologies made this box called a stereo simulator, which I guess is kind of like a Dimension D. It wasn't like an obvious chorus effect, but it definitely made stereo out of whatever you put into it.
You want to talk about making use of the guitar parts in this song. I mean, in the chorus, you got those call and responses, and then we get into pre-chorus too. The lyric is the same, the yeah, yeahs, the God is great, but the first two yeah, yeahs of each line are harmonized with an overdriven Lee guitar lick.
It's the same.
Awesome.
It's the same guitar as the chorus, as the fuzzy guitar.
Prophets and yeah, yeah, God is great. Yeah, yeah, God is good. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I don't think there's a harmony behind that. I kept listening if there's a vocal harmony. I only hear a harmony on the very last line, the yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounds like there's a super buried harmony, and that may be you again there.
Yep. So, wait, do I have a guitar handy here? I can show you something.
I would love it. Yeah, you did this last time, and it was awesome.
Let me grab a guitar. What guitar shall I grab? How about a nice Martin D28?
Love it. Martin D28. Let's hear it.
A 1955 D28.
I've never played a Martin pre. Jeez.
Well,
definitely not a 1950s Martin.
There's a story behind this guy too, because you wouldn't think it was a 1955.
No, that looks like brand new.
I was gifted this guitar in 1990, whatever. It belonged to a high school friend of mine, and it was unplayable, and I kept having the top patched up. And I ended up bringing it to the Martin factory, which is just an hour from here. And they advised that I go for a total restoration, including a new top. So it's a 2007 top.
Okay. I was going to say that thing looks, brand new.
This is actually the guitar I used. All the acoustic parts on that album were this guitar.
That's so great.
So to get back to the subject at hand. So the pre-chorus, the main guitar has this counter melody going. Oh, can you hear this?
Yep,
is this
yep,
being picked up?
Yeah, okay. It's picked up. It's great.
Right. So that bang, bang. So I'm basically just echoing that. So it's just picking up what's already there.
It does something so cool with her vocal too. It's so I'll use the word again, and sometimes this word gets misconstrued. It's very simple, but what it does just adds the world to that part.
Yeah, it all works.
It's so good. Well, chorus two, we get what I'm calling the double chorus here, but it's not really a double because of the turnaround that's crazy. Pretty much the same instrumentation here as chorus one. You can tell, again, this wasn't a Pro Tools recording. Nothing's copy and pasted. Some of the bass runs are getting a little more involved here. And the guitar panned off left is way more playful here. What you're doing here in the second chorus, it's awesome. It's almost like you kind of get into like an old rock and roll kind of rockabilly thing going off to the left. It's really neat what you're playing there.
Yeah, yeah, what if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus trying to make his way home. Trying to make his way home. Back up to heaven all alone.
And this chorus has an awesome turnaround halfway through, where the guitar lick panned off right, continued playing for another half bar in chorus one. Now the vocal turns it around there on the line, just trying to make his way home. If that made sense to you, there's a cool turnaround there.
It's the same on both. The guitar part never changes. The guitar keeps going. Trying to make his way home.
That was empty on the first chorus at the end because the guitar lick comes in there. So right. The vocal, it's really, really cool. I'm going to read the second half of this chorus. Mm-hmm. Is just trying to make his way home, back up to heaven, all alone. Nobody calling on the phone, except for the Pope, maybe in Rome. What a cool line.
Yep, and funny, he never called me.
No. Still, you're still waiting. Maybe he just got a cell phone. He's late to the party. What are you trying to say here? I mean, back up to heaven all alone? Is that God up to heaven all alone? Or
I don't know. I really don't know.
You don't know. And you said this was written in that initial session. That line just came out of the sky. The Pope in Rome?
The whole thing just came out. Yep.
Ah. I could just sit here and ponder that thought alone in silence for 10 minutes and marvel at it. I love that.
I mean, I can analyze it, you know, all day, but that's no different from anybody else analyzing. I just happen to be the guy that wrote it down.
You happen to be the vessel that it came through, right? Well, on the last line here, the chorus doesn't resolve as it goes to the guitar solo, which is the pre-chorus chords. So we get those again, but only the first two lines, the first eight bars of the pre-chorus. We don't get the whole thing here. Drums, bass, and stereo guitars. Off left, that guitar is starting the solo. Another guitar panned off right is playing more of a riff than a counter solo. As we go back to the verse, chorus progression. It comes right back for eight bars. And this part is genius. The guitar panned off left is soloing, kind of going off, but the guitar panned right goes back to that beautiful chorus hook.
The guitar on the left was the track guitar. I did not overdub that solo. That solo, it got to the solo, and every other take we had done, I just kept playing the riff, and I figured I'd overdub the solo, but we were in the moment. I stomped on that rat pedal and just played that solo.
I can't remember the last time I listened to a song, and this is another part that I must have rewinded that part 10 times. Just listen to that section going, my brain is able to fully hear the guitar solo, but I'm also fully hearing the hook of the song simultaneously.
Yep.
That's awesome. That is really cool.
Yeah, that was the Rick 12 on the other side overdubbed there. Now, interesting thing, you're talking about the single edit.
Correct.
Which
yes.
Completely like messed with the integrity of that of the solo and of the structure of the song there. And I think I actually did the edit myself on my little digital work studio. At that point, I had a Roland VS-880, which I think is actually what I did the edit on. They sent me a DAT, but that's just one of those necessary evils to get it down to single length.
I know, and I wrestled with that for this show of what version to do. Typically, I'll always go for the album version, but this song was so massive and so known at radio with this version. I thought that was the right call here, Eric.
Yeah, that's fine.
After this guitar solo, we go back to the pre-chorus again. So we were just in the pre-chorus for a second, chord arrangement-wise. We go then to the chorus verse progression, and now we're back to the pre-chorus again.
Yeah, yeah.
Same lyrics here, although the last three yeah, yeah, yeahs, we get some subtle, really low male voices. That's the first time you can really hear that it's men singing to me, right there.
Well, I did that on all of the pre-choruses, actually, because
okay.
like the demo, you know, it, you know, on my demo, I'm singing a low octave and then I add a high octave. So I just thought that was a cool effect and we'd try it. But, you know, on this album in general, less was more. So we ended up just putting it in the very end.
Okay. I thought you were saying it was there. I was like, wait, I swear I didn't hear it till the end. Okay. I love that though. I love things like that, that it only comes in that one time. Pre-chorus 3 is very light drum work here. So the feel there changes with the bass and a really playful guitar plucking away off to the left. And I hear that mellotron. I hear that over, sounds like it's on the right, but it may very well be centered there.
Or stereo, who knows?
Yeah. I love this pre-chorus 3 because it's the same, but it's not. That feel of the drums here. And it kind of makes sense now, and this isn't a knock on Rob. This part and the very end of the song, like the coda, what's going on drum-wise is very erratic and almost doesn't fit a pop song like this, but yet it does.
He thought we were done. He thought that it was an experiment that had failed. And that at any moment, Bill was gonna hit stop on the machine. But no, that was not to be. You know, we were in for a penny, in for a pound. That was the take.
That's awesome. Well, chorus 3, we get a double chorus here. What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus trying to make his way home. Like a holy rolling stone, back up to heaven all alone. Just trying to make his way home. Nobody calling on the phone, except for the Pope, maybe in Rome. And we added that line, like a holy rolling stone. You felt like it needed something here at the last chorus?
Well, originally, it was in the second chorus as well, on my demo. Because your whole arrangement was in the box, in the Ensoniq keyboard with a sequencer. So I couldn't even really see how many bars of this or that. So I think I actually went through an extra 2 bars of chorus before the solo. So I think I actually, on the original demo, it goes, trying to make his way home, repeat, trying to make his way home, just like a holy rolling stone back up to heaven all alone. And, you know, I guess Joan in the moment just liked, you know, because when we cut it with a normal number of bars there. So I think Joan just sort of preferred or just naturally went to repeating, trying to make his way home and saving the Rolling Stone for the end.
It's interesting. All the lyric sites you go to, Eric, it all says just trying to make his way home. And then it says like a holy rolling stone.
Yeah. So
they're all written like that. But the lyric's not there.
When we do it live with the Hooters, I do like a holy rolling stone in the second chorus rather than repeating trying to make his way home. But interesting aside, whenever I do it, and when I originally did it, it was just like a holy rolling stone, which is echoing just trying to make his way home, but it's also echoing just like Tom Thumb's Blues by Bob Dylan. So, and Joan didn't do that, and I might have mentioned it to her, but it was like, whatever. So it was supposed to be just trying to make his way home.
Well, again, we get the same overall instrumentation here in chorus 3, but it seems like everything gets a little bigger here. I think the intensity of the band is kind of ramped up here. And I'll tell you, one of my favorite things happens here. It's when you, and I believe it's Rob, these backing vocals, and this has a Crash Test Dummies quality to it, what you're kind of singing here, which is of that time period. And these backing vocals, if you were just to ISO them, if you were to isolate them, it kind of sounds alternative to your point earlier of what was going on musically. But I love what you're singing. You're singing, and I'm talking about if the capo was on the second fret here. Yep. I'm just gonna call it E minor C G to D.
Yep.
you're singing that, but it's twice as fast as where the chords are going in the chorus, but it's the same root notes.
That was Rob's idea. He was. Well, I'll go back to the F sharp. He said, ah, so I went, just like, yeah, and we double tracked that, and boom.
Well, because you could have had it with the guitar chords. You could have had it, but right. you had it doubled, which, but it's the same root
it's,
notes.
It's not doubled. It's just, it's all anticipated. It's just starting an eighth note earlier.
Okay. I'm calling it doubled, but yeah, it's anticipated.
Actually, no, it's not anticipated one. And so the first one is actually an eighth note late. On the beat. So it's really just that first note that's coming an eighth note later that makes the whole thing feel like it's got its own cadence.
I didn't realize that. Now I get it. I was calling it sped up, and now I know what you're saying. That is really, really interesting. Well, on the line, just trying to make his way home, the band stops. And on the very last two lines, I'm calling the coda, we get some stick hits, some cymbal hits kind of going left and right, panning around, and a couple guitar chord strums with this distorted guitar here. But again, what's going on with the drums, it's kind of all over the place, but it works.
We had no idea what we were doing there. It was just like, I mean, really, it was like skating on thin ice. Like, we're okay, what do we do now?
I can tell, but it's so this happy accident that whatever happened there is just it just works so perfectly. And the last thing you hear, of course, the last thing you hear panned off to the right is that guitar playing the vocal melody hook of the song, and then technically, the last thing you hear is a couple cymbal hits off left.
Yeah. Dang, dang.
The last thing the listener's left with is that hook. You know, one of us, the whole song. It's great.
The crazy thing about that last hook that the people are hearing is, I've got this fancy new capo I'm going to try out.
All right.
Is, you've heard 4 minutes and something of it in E minor. Right? But the last time you hear it, it's over a C.
Oh, man.
Which was the first time I ever played it like that. It was just kind of like, we're hanging on the C there. I want to play the riff again, but I don't want to resolve it. So let's see, can I do it? Yep, I can do it.
That is absolutely, you just floored me. I didn't pick that out. That is so cool. So that's the original way you played it.
Yep. Well, that's how I played it on that. Yeah. On that take, it was the first time I played it that way. And
on that take.
That take, yeah, yeah. That was it, totally of the moment.
You just blew my mind. Well, listen, this has been again an absolute pleasure talking to you. As you know, I've been a fan of the Hooters since I was a kid. Had a blast having you on before. Had a blast having you on with this song, and my appreciation for this song is through the roof. What you did here, and it was a blast breaking it down. And before we leave, what do you got for the listeners? What's coming up in the world of Eric Bazillion, the Hooters? What do you got happening?
Well, the Hooters, right now we're planning our summer tour of Europe again, our annual summer vacation. Don't know that anything much is going to happen between now and then. You know, we put out a new album this year. We did our first U.S. tour in 30 years, which was a blast, touring with Rick Springfield.
What was that like going out? I mean, I know you saw people that saw you 30 years ago, and you're looking out going, how do I recognize that guy?
We had a fair number of people who came up to us with photos they'd taken with us in like 85, 86, and asked us to reprise the photo with them now and with their kids who were the age that they were in those pictures. That was amazing. It was great. You know, we played 45 minutes. It was boom, 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 the hits. We did play the single from the new album, which got everybody on their feet. I think there were a lot of people who didn't figure out who we actually were until the last song, which was And We Danced. we didn't even bother doing our big hits in Germany. We didn't do Johnny B or Satellite or 500 Miles.
And why was that?
Because nobody knows those songs in the United States. The songs that gave us our career in Europe are the songs that ended our career here.
Go figure, right?
Go figure.
Oh, man.
One thing I should clarify, that the new girlfriend who had moved over from Sweden is my wife now of 28 years and mother of two of my children, and my life partner, and has continued to be an inspiration.
Congratulations. And one last question for you. Mm-hmm. When you met her, were you flying coach or were you up in business class?
Oh, we were coach. We were coach.
So she really loves you then.
And the guy who tuned my guitars got upgraded. So I was really pissed off until I saw who was coming down the aisle, and I knew she was sitting in the window seat next to me.
And for those out there that don't know what it feels like to be sitting in coach and look up and the guy selling your t-shirts or tuning your guitars is in first class, that's an ego check right there.
Well, it all worked out for the best.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eric.
My pleasure.
That song you were just hearing is the song that Eric referenced. That is Why Won't You Call Me Back from the Hooters' latest album called Rocking and Swing. I hope you all enjoyed Eric Bazillion's return appearance to Krista Makes a Podcast. We really enjoyed it. And don't go anywhere. We got lots more Krista Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room.
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass to Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is called Local Teen, and you gotta listen to this bio. After being hospitalized for low blood pressure due to his enormous penis, the one-man band known as Local Teen converted his masturbatorium into a recording studio and began making music that is in the exact middle between his two favorite bands, NOFX and Radiohead, and yet sounds like neither. Evidently, a Local Teen has 12 full-length albums on Spotify. Who knew? Here's a snippet of their song. How many times do I have to tell you dumb motherfuckers?
With Chris and Chris.
Well, hey, Chris, you usually start these wraps off, but I got to say, Eric Bazillion, one of the nicest, most well-spoken guests we've ever had. This guy's awesome.
He's incredible. I couldn't wait to have him back. Last time we did And We Danced, but one of us is actually, in the United States at least, is his biggest hit. And man, oh man, he did not let us down one bit.
I love people that love talking about their songs. Hence the reason I have a songwriting podcast, but he loves it too. He gets the guitar out. He gets into it.
I love that. I wish everyone broke a guitar out the way he did. I wanted him to play more, but yeah. I'm glad we got a little bit of playing. Of course, we talked to him after you were done about this, but it's another one of those songs. It just spilled out of him. What came to his head is what ended up in the Joan Osborne version of the song, and it's a hit.
I know, and it makes you wonder if his girlfriend at the time is his now wife of 28 years, if she hadn't pressed him that night about all this, you know, this recording, you know, primitive gear he had on his kitchen table, a four-track recorder with a bunch of wires, and she needled him enough to get him in front of the stuff, and this song was born.
Everything had to happen exactly the way it did for this hit to exist. Yes, that night they had to be watching that documentary and she had to say to him like, hey, I want to see how this stuff works. And then off the top of his head, he had to make this song. And you asked him the question, is this song a hit if Joan doesn't sing it? I'm sure lots of people could have done an amazing job of it, but I think that it had to be this. It had to be this combination. It had to be Joan Osborne. It had to be Eric's song. I think that was the magic.
I know. And you could go down the hypothetical rabbit hole all day long. I wanted to ask him like, okay, if Joan's, you know, if her version wasn't a success, would you have shopped the song to other artists? Would you have still believed in it? And he never got there. It's all hypothetical. You can't sit there and say, well, maybe we would have done this because the song was a smash right out of the gate.
Well, the perfect example of that is Prince did this song.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Prince did this song. It wasn't a hit, right?
No. Well, and even he said his version was good, but it didn't evoke the same, you know, sentiment as Joan's version. Something I didn't ask Eric that and maybe he doesn't even know. I'm sure he does, but the album came out March 21st in 95, Chris, but the single wasn't released until November, 7 months later. And there was no other single that preceded it. So I wonder what went on there. Maybe the label just didn't believe in it, but that's pretty interesting. The song was also the last song on side A, the sixth song on side A out of, I think, 12 songs on the record. So maybe they didn't think it was a hit, and I didn't ask him that either.
Maybe there was a little bit of a groundswell or a reaction to this song when the album came out from people that liked Joan. Maybe it was they were seeing a reaction to it on the road. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Usually you're going to release the single maybe a few weeks before the album even comes out to build up that hype, especially mm-hmm. in 1995.
Yeah, and I probably could have talked to him about this song for 2 hours. Because just questions like that, I had so many questions. You want to talk about, I said this to Eric, I always tread lightly with saying something is simple. You never want to offend somebody, but man, this chord progression, it doesn't get much more simple, the verse and the chorus. It's what's built around it. That haunting guitar hook that's just in there everywhere, it just keeps playing that vocal hook.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the simple chord progression, but what he's playing isn't simple, which is illustrated by the fact that Eddie Van Halen came up to him and asked him how he played the riff. Could you imagine if Eddie Van Halen would have came up to you and asked you how you played something?
No, and even he acknowledged that was pretty cool. I'm like, that's pretty cool, man. I mean,
yeah.
That's remarkable, but yeah, and let's give a MVP award here to Rob Hyman, the keyboardist from the Hooters, who just decided he was going to pinch hit on the drums here out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Who does that?
These guys are beasts, man. And also, yeah. I wanted to talk about the no rhyme scheme thing. I want to note, it does start rhyming at the end of the song. You know, the Pope may be in Rome and the nobody calling on the phone. At least sort of rhymes. But I get what you're saying in the verses and stuff. And I was thinking to myself, I never thought about the fact that it doesn't rhyme because it's pulled off so well that you're not thinking about like, oh, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't rhyme. And I was trying to think about other artists and songs that don't use rhyme. Instantly, my head went to, oh, of course, one of my favorites, Björk. She famously doesn't rhyme in her lyrics. Alanis Morissette a lot of times doesn't rhyme. Sheryl Crow's All I Want to Do, which you guys brought up Sheryl Crow. That song doesn't rhyme a lot. Get Down Tonight from Casey and the Sunshine Band. Silly Love Songs from Paul McCartney and Wings. The list can go on, but it is sort of a rare thing.
It is. There's way more songs that rhyme. And I think that just starts with you know, our nursery rhymes as a kid. They had to rhyme. They had to be catchy. And there's something about rhyming that's catchy. It's the same melody. It rhymes, and something to be said about that. But yeah, as I said to Eric, I think that there's a personal quality to these verses that you get by not having any rhymes. It's like someone's just talking to you, spilling their guts.
You've done that a lot in Less Than Jake, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you feel like you've done that a lot? Like, have these lyrics and songs that don't rhyme? Haven't you talked about that before? Especially,
yeah,
some...
we have before, and at the time it kind of irked me, but now I like that. It has to work too, Chris. It can't just be thrown in there haphazardly.
So I'm just complimenting you. You're good at making it work too. And
well, thank you.
Also, I never knew until now that Eric does vocals on this song. I didn't realize that was his voice in there.
And I love how he gave a nod to Smashing Pumpkins. It was of the time era, you know, right. Different guitar tones. That guitar in the chorus, if you just zone in on it, it is way too dirty, nasty, and ugly for this song. But somehow it works. It works perfectly. And again, the consummate guest. I'd love having him back sometime. He was absolutely incredible.
I would have him on every year. And it seems like maybe he'd be down. I could just tell. I love these episodes where... you can just tell the guest loves talking about music, and
that's right.
It makes it such an enjoyable listening experience. And I hope everyone out there who's listening feels the same way. I definitely felt it. And if you like an enjoyable listening experience, Chris, you might also like our bonus episode each week, which we call The After Party.
That's right. Join our supporting cast, which is our version of Patreon, where each week you get a bonus episode of The After Party where Chris and I, we ramble on more about music because we love music. We love songwriting. So please head over to ChrisDeMakes.com and join us. Give Chris Fafalius a follow on Instagram. We also have a Chris DeMakes a Podcast Instagram page now.
We do.
Go over there and check that out. So if you're part of our Facebook group and you want to wander over there and join, please join the party. The more, the merrier. And also go subscribe to our YouTube page, Chris DeMakes Official. Head over there. Lots of good stuff and content Chris is always putting up there. And want to thank this week's guest, Mr. Eric Bazillion, for sitting in the hot seat. We'll see you next time.
Hey, everybody. Satan here. I know what you're thinking. Jesus Christ, Satan has a podcast now, too? No, that's not it. But I am here to tell you about a podcast, and it's one that's all about my favorite band, Punchline. Not the band you expected me to say, right? You probably figured I'd like Slayer, or maybe some backwards Beatles records or something. Those are okay. But you usually find me rocking out to fan-favorite Punchline albums like Action or Lion while I'm torturing dead people for all of eternity. Punchline's podcast is called A Band Called Punchline. And it's super entertaining to listen to this documentary-style look back at the 25 years of my favorite band. Honestly, I'm really feeling like I'm getting to know these guys, and their story is amazing. I'm so ready for them to get down here. I have so many questions. I gotta give them credit for catching on to my whole 37 thing, too. There's a reason why they're my favorite band, and if you listen to their podcast, they might become yours, too. A Band Called Punchline is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Check it out, and I'll see you all in hell.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.